It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up!
Welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined alongside Scotty Bordelon. Another day in quarantine, another week in quarantine. We survived and we are here to get you through another week in quarantine. As I always, Scotty Bordelon is a socially distanced 6 feet apart from me. And he right now is scrolling through as we reminisce on old Arkansas basketball teams. Talking about freshman year Bobby Portis and that squad that ended up going to the NIT that lost to Cal twice that year. Who would have thought?
Yeah, one of those games was in Maui. And Arkansas, I think, is going to be playing in Maui in a few years from now. So I don't know why I got there, but that's where you go sometimes when you don't really have just a whole lot.
Exactly. We find our way around here in the sports world. And Scotty has found his way around the Arkansas basketball team, writing season reviews about the main players on the basketball team. And he didn't stop this week as we have Gene Tosilla and Jimmy Witt to talk about. We also have a fantastic story written by Scotty that he has been teasing on this podcast for seems like
forever,
3 months. But
yeah, way too long.
But it was a fantastic story, well worth the read. I encourage you to read it. It'll be in the description of this podcast. So make sure to click on that if you haven't read it already. But if you have, you can also get some good insight from Scotty. And then we also can't leave out the fact that Arkansas has gotten its first transfer of the year in Vance Jackson.
I like that guy. And I like that kid a lot.
Scotty's got some information. He wrote a story while talking to some guys that covered Vance this year, so he'll have some background on him to give to you. And as well, Mus is getting into it with an assistant coach in the SEC.
I'm here for the pettiness. I'm here for it.
It's petty on his part to start off, and we'll get to that as well. So that's the show that we have lined up for you today here on the basketball podcast of Mid-America. So let's start with Gene Tosilla, one of the more, I don't use the word disappointing lightly here, Scotty, but just a guy that came in with expectations. When you transfer in as a grad transfer and come into play, you expect that you're going to help the team. And Silla, for whatever reason, just didn't help the team a whole lot this year.
Yeah, he was one of those guys. I remember last July, you and I went over to the Basketball Performance Center and we talked to two guys. We got Mason Jones, and Mason was pretty prophetic in what he told us. He was like, I know there's some good things coming for me this year. I expect, you know, Mason to have a good year and build on what he did his first year at Arkansas, but I didn't expect, you know, a All-American, honorable mention type year, co-SEC player of the year type of season. But Gene Tall was the other one that we talked to, and he said he was going to be ready for the jump from UNC Wilmington to Arkansas. And like on paper, it looked like it was a pretty good addition. Like he was a 1,000-point career scorer in his previous stops. And so you figure you're getting, you know, someone with pretty good experience who's, you know, filled it up at times in the past, and it just, you know, didn't really come to fruition this year. You know, I broke his game down this year into, you know, strengths and weaknesses like I have everybody else. And I think one of the best things that he brought to the team was, you know, he rebounded in bunches and like short stints. You know, he rebounded about 18% of available defensive rebounds when he was on the floor, which is almost 1 out of 5, which is pretty good considering he didn't play just a ton. He also played, I thought, fairly well at times. I think his best game was probably at Mississippi State on January 22nd. There was a loss in Starkville. And he scored 5 points. He hit a transition three, and then he had a pretty nice little step through layup in the lane. That was pretty nice. You're like, okay, maybe Gentile's starting to maybe turn the corner there a little bit. But I think the rest of the way he only went like 1 of 7 from the floor. So, I mean, he just, for whatever reason, it just didn't really work for a lot of the year. But he was also commended after that game by Muss, saying that, you know, the defense that he played on Reggie Perry in that game was arguably the best and most effective way that Arkansas defended Reggie Perry. You know, he kind of got underneath and was really effective. That's kind of how you have to play a guy. I feel like, you know, if you're already at a size disadvantage and you're playing a guy that's as powerful as Reggie Perry is, you kind of have to play underneath him. And, you know, he thought he was pretty effective there. As far as like the weaknesses, I mean, it was just like, we just didn't see the playmaking from him. We just didn't happen. And, you know, this was something that I probably mentioned to you at certain points in the season. He didn't have an assist in his first 14 games played, which, you know, I don't think he wasn't like a real high assist guy in his previous, like at Florida Atlantic and UNC Wilmington, he wasn't like a really high assist guy, but he played 119 minutes in those first 14 games without one. And he didn't, to me, it was almost as if he didn't even look to create when he caught on the perimeter. It was just lots of like dribble handoffs and, you know, setting ball screens that were not all that effective. And then he could kind of be inefficient offensively. I had him for the season. He was 8 of 18 in the lane. He was a combined 0 of 7 from 3 on the left wing and in the right corner. And when I talked to, you know, shortly after he committed to Arkansas, I reached out to a guy that I think his name is Alex Riley. He writes for maybe the Florida Times Union. And he covered Gentile and UNC Wilmington quite a bit. And he said that 10 to 15 foot jumper was his bread and butter. And like I said earlier, like that just never really materialized.
Thinking from the top of my head, I don't remember how many times he attempted a 10 to 15 footer.
Yeah, I don't either. Let me say, I can pull up those numbers, but it was not very often.
And that's as a shot maker, as a basketball player at the Division I level, you have to get to your sweet spot. You know what spot you can make the ball. And if you want to be effective in the college game, then you have to be able to get there. And he just wasn't this year, and you know, for whatever reason it was that was affecting him on the court, he just wasn't the key player that I think Eric Musselman thought he was bringing in. And those things happen sometimes. With every Jimmy Witt, there comes Gentile Silla at the same time.
Yeah, I had him. No, I actually had him 2 of 15 from 3 this year. So I, you know, you look at his numbers on Arkansas's official stat page, it says 2 of 13. So I may have to go back and look and see where those two extra threes were. But in terms of like those jump shots or the shots, you know, outside the lane, inside the arc, I had him at 0 for 7. So he only made 2 jump shots all year.
That's not great.
Yeah. It was less than ideal, I'd say.
Well, Silla will not be returning next year. So we'll move on from him and talk about another guy that's unfortunately not going to return. And for the Razorbacks, if you heard it once this year, you heard it 1,000 times. A guy that started his career at the University of Arkansas and is now finishing it, but had a stint at SMU in the middle. And that is
interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
It's a crazy story, you know, crazy, crazy story. And that is Jimmy Witt. Before we move on and talk about Jimmy Witt, it just occurred to me, you know what that reminds me of? The Arkansas offensive line from, what was it, like 2015, that was the heaviest in all of football.
Oh, yeah.
And every single game, the announcers made sure to tell us that.
Yeah, it was like the biggest offensive line in America.
Yeah, yeah. That reminded me of that. The biggest offensive line in college football. Thanks. We knew that the first game. That was cool the first game. Now we're into the 10th game, and you've told us. And same thing with Jimmy Witt. We're now in the SEC tournament. And, hey, did you know Jimmy Witt started his career at Arkansas and went to SMU and is now back?
Yeah, it was wild. I remember, I think it may have been like that Texas Tech game that Arkansas played on the road where they just kind of ran the ball at will. I feel like that's the game where they just
wouldn't stop talking about.
Yeah, they made everybody's ears bleed talking about how big the line was.
The heaviest line in college football, or no, in all of football. It was heavier than any NFL line. As
yeah.
Well. All right, that was just a sidetrack of the. I guess they're trying to say because of the visiting team may not have watched a Razorback game all year, but still, for the if you watch every single Razorback game, that got annoying real quick. All right, back to Jimmy Witt, a man that only attempted three-pointers when it was necessary. What did he have, two, three this year, something like that?
He attempted one.
One, okay.
One official. And one, I think, was at, you know, maybe the end of a half or the end of a shot clock, and I think his foot was on the line.
Oh, okay.
So that one technically wasn't a three. So I think he officially ended the year 0-for-1.
I was curious if he would shoot one all year long, and I was thinking it would have to be at an end-to-half situation.
And it was.
And it was. You're exactly right.
It was on the night that I think he scored 30 against Vanderbilt. I think it was like at end of the first half, just maybe 5 or 6 seconds left, and you know Jimmy got one up just to see if it would drop. I think he left it a little bit short, but that was it.
But this man was a mid-range specialist, and just the improvement, the maturity for him on this team, he was extremely helpful to this Razorback team and making the push all throughout the season that they did.
Yeah, his number one strength for me, obviously, was his mid-range game. He single-handedly brought the mid-range back from the dead.
Yes, sir. Like
Eric Musselman said after that South Dakota game when he went absolutely nuts from with those two-point jumpers. He was like, here's a PSA to all the analytics guys out there. Welcome to Jimmy Witt's world. That game, he scored 24 points on 11 of 14 from the floor. He was 9 of 12 on two-point jumpers outside the – I think it was like above – you know, you cut the lane in half.
Right.
From above the midline in the lane, up, and then in the pockets on either side of the lane, he was 9 of 12 on those jumpers. 4 of 5 on the left, 3 of 5 in the center, 2 of 2 on the right. Like, they just couldn't figure him out. He was getting to his spots whenever he wanted to. He was brilliant. I think I remember writing a headline for my story. I definitely wrote about Jimmy after that game. I think I titled it Jimmy's Gym, Whip Flashes Mid-Range Brilliance. Like I think that was the first time we really saw Jimmy be like an absolute killer in the mid-range. And a couple other games that stood out to me were LSU on the road. He went 8 of 12 on jumpers in that game. And then Missouri at home, he went 6 of 10. That was the first game that Isaiah Joe came back, so he, you know, kind of got back into a groove there. And then against Vanderbilt and Bud Walton Arena, he was 6 of 13, which is it's not great, but you know, still you're hitting 6 mid-range jumpers. You're driving Quanzo Martin and Jerry Stackhouse crazy. But for the season, I had him left of the lane. He was 42 of 93,
dang,
which is pushing 50%. And then, you know, he hit a season high 14 two-point jumpers left of the lane in January on 28 attempts. So he shot 50% on the left side of the floor on those two-point jumpers in January. And then, you see, in the middle of the floor, he was 34 of 70. So he's, again, right around 50%. And then he struggled a little bit on the right side of the floor. He was 20 of 56. You know, if it wasn't for that five or six game stretch that Isaiah Joe didn't play in February, he would have been like his numbers on the right side of the floor would have been awesome too. I think he was like 1 of 11 on the right side of the lane when Isaiah was out. But other than that, you know, you're thinking he's 19 of 45, which is, it's not bad. I mean, 40-45%. For the year, he shot 44% on those two-point mid-range jumpers, which is really good. He was dynamite from there.
Yeah, he was – I'm at a loss for words of how to describe Jimmy's game almost in a day and age when everything revolves around three-pointer, but he was crucial to this team. He could go anywhere from running point to guarding the big man on defense. And that was a part of his game that – was, I don't want to say underrated like Isaiah Joe, because I think Isaiah Joe's defense is underrated.
Definitely.
I think people just focus on his offensive ability. But Jimmy Witt could shut down. He was playing the best offensive player every single night,
especially
when Isaiah Joe was out. They would put Jimmy Witt on the best offensive player, and he would shut them down. He could. He had the possibility of shutting them down.
Definitely.
And he didn't earn all defensive player or defensive team, probably mainly because Arkansas was in the lower half of the SEC standings more than anything. And
I agree with that.
But he was a good defensive player. He had his shot. He knew his role on this team. And whenever he got rolling, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. Talking about what you just mentioned defensively, that was my number three note for him and the strengths. You know, he accepted that defensive challenge every night. Like, Mus understood that, you know, Jimmy's probably the best defender on the team. And Jimmy, think about this. Like, there were points in the season when Arkansas went to Indiana that Jimmy was guarding Trace Jackson Davis, who's like 6'9", 6'10", and he's a load, man. And he also had – there were also defensive stretches at Georgia Tech when he defended James Banks, who's almost 7 foot tall and one of the longest guys that Arkansas played all year. And then in terms of guard play, he defended Desmond Bane from TCU really well. Desmond Bane had just scored 27 points on Texas Tech. Texas Tech finished the season – as a top 10 defense in terms of defensive efficiency, according to KenPom. He scored 27 on them. He plays Jimmy Witt the next time out. He scores 8 points on 6 shots. So Jimmy did a really good job on Desmond Bane. And Desmond Bane's he's not like your typical guard. Like, he's stacked. Like, he's
right.
Built really well, really well put together, and pretty much eliminated him. And Kevin Samuels was their big 6'11 forward, was about the only guy that had a pulse offensively that day. And then I also think about when Tennessee came to Bud and Jimmy got matched up on Santiago Vescovi and just completely shut him down. First game, you know, Vescovi, I think, joined Tennessee at the beginning of conference play, so around early January. That game they played against Arkansas in Bud Walton was the first game in his college career that he did not make a three. It was the first game in his college career he did not have an assist. That was Jimmy Witt. Jimmy Witt was a menace. I mean, it wasn't just Jimmy was getting a hand up when Vescovi would take shots. I mean, he was denying inbounds passes to Vescovi. He was playing passing lanes, deflecting passes, deflecting balls away. Just kind of throwing off the flow of the game and, you know, taking Vescovi out of sync. So, I mean, you can go on and on and on about Jimmy, but those are, you know, maybe three or four of the games that really stand out to me.
Yeah, you could go on and on about Jimmy, but we'll wrap it up there. As I encouraged you with Gene Tosilla, make sure that you go into the description of this podcast, read Scotty's review on Jimmy Witt. It'll give you your basketball fix, at least for a little while. Before we move on and talk about, I want to talk about Musselman on his Q&A session next. But before we do that, we need to stop and do a nice tip of the cap to former Arkansas coach Eddie Sutton on making the Hall of Fame. Was it his seventh time is the charm? Is that correct?
Seventh time.
And a well-deserved award for the head coach. And I never saw any of his teams play live or anything like that. But when you go back and you look at old video of those teams, you know, Eddie Sutton was the coach really that put Arkansas basketball on the map. And he kind of left with a bad taste in his mouth. But just like anything, really, time heals all wounds. And I really think that Arkansas fans are appreciative. I mean, just what you saw this year from Musselman and when they went back to Barnhill to play in the red-white game, and it was Team Sutton versus Team Richardson. Like, Arkansas knows what Eddie Sutton did for this program now, and it's been a while and long enough now that you can respect the man that did it.
For sure. It was really cool to see Eddie Sutton at that game back in Barnhill too. It was really cool. And, you know, just you can almost localize any story in a way, and Matt had me do that on Friday. It was about 5:30 on Friday once there were reports coming out that Eddie was going to be in the Hall of Fame class. There are a couple assistant coaches at Arkansas who have ties to Eddie, directly to Eddie and the Sutton family. Corey Williams, who was Musselman's first hire on his staff at Arkansas, played for Eddie Sutton at Oklahoma State, and then he came back and was a student assistant under Eddie the year that the Cowboys made a run to the Final Four. So that's really cool. I remember talking to Corey Williams back in the fall. I think it was on Halloween. I talked to all three of the assistant coaches on the same day. And, you know, just one of the questions I asked all three of the guys was, who are your biggest basketball influences? And Corey Williams, right off the top, said Eddie Sutton. And they built such a strong bond and strong relationship that, you know, long after Corey Williams left Oklahoma State the second time around, he said that Eddie Sutton would still call him on his birthday, and when he was able to, he would sing him happy birthday, which is really cool. Just kind of gives you an insight into the heart that Eddie had. And Chris Crutchfield also has ties to the Sutton family. He worked with a couple of Eddie's sons at Oral Roberts. So just it's a small world, man, and it's crazy. Like, I think the Oklahoma State basketball Twitter account put out a list of the coaches who have become head coaches or are, you know, Division I assistant coaches, and Corey Williams was on there. And I mean, it's an incredibly long list. Like, it's 20 or 25 coaches, and I think 7 or 8 of them are current Division I coaches. Like, it's crazy the coaching tree that he's got. It's pretty unbelievable.
A well-deserved award. He gets to go in there the same time as another legend in Kobe Bryant. And it just, as I said, a well-deserved award for the man that put Arkansas basketball on the map.
There are a couple of cool stories too on the site that Clay wrote. You know, they're Eddie Sutton related. He talked to Ron Brewer about Eddie Sutton. And then he wrote another column just about how, you know, Eddie brought defense to Arkansas, and that's kind of how he got the program kickstarted and put it on the map, like you said.
All right, now moving on to the current head coach of the University of Arkansas, and Eric Musselman. I think Musselman's a little bored, just kind of like all of us, though, as he had a Q&A on Instagram Live, and to his respect, that's a good way to get connected with the fans and kind of still have interest in your program. And Scotty wrote an article about the 5 most interesting things that Eric Musselman said during his Q&A. He's kind of getting in a little petty argument with an assistant coach in the SEC, which Scotty and I both have said we are here for. But there's just a lot of good information in here, so I encourage you to read the article. But one of the things that I guess stood out to me, and you said is probably the most interesting before we get into the social media pettiness, is that the biggest difference between coaching in the Mountain West and the SEC, Eric Musselman said, was negative recruiting in the SEC.
Yeah, that raised an eyebrow with me for sure, because that was real. That was definitely real. You know, sometimes you can check into those Instagram lives and you just kind of go through the motions answering questions, and he went deeper answering that question than I thought he might. You know, I assumed that he was going to say something about the athletes, the length, the athleticism, the total collection of great athletes and good rebounders in that league, and then the coaches. You know, he's got great respect for a number of the coaches in the league. But he said, quote, "I think the Mountain West coaches were really respectful to one another and just worried about recruiting the right way and worried about their own programs. I haven't really experienced that coming into this league, which is pretty unfortunate because it's hard enough to coach and recruit to your own team. When you start worrying about and saying negative things about other people in your own conference, it's not good for the conference." That was, damn. Yeah, that was eyebrow raising to me. I'm sure that's taken some adjusting for sure, because they've hit the ground running and recruiting, you know, since they got here, and they've done things not only with those videos that, you know, Must put out 3 videos shortly after the season ended, but I mean, they've gone viral with some of
the pictures.
Yeah, with the pictures and the photo recreations and stuff. And, you know, I guess somebody or maybe multiple somebodies in the league, you're just, you know, being a wet blanket and just not having any fun with it.
To put it into perspective, I remember at the beginning of the basketball season, I talked and went to a lot of Mike Nabors' press conferences this year, and Mike Nabors said exactly the same thing. He said, we're starting to get a little negative recruiting. And he took it and he said, it's all right. You know, he said, you can tell that the difference in the program a little bit. He said, because when I first got here, nobody was even worried about us.
Yeah, nobody's going to make negative comments unless you're making moves.
Exactly. So you can look at it that way and, okay, so we're getting negative recruited and that stinks. And I do believe that Musselman is right. It probably does hurt the league when a recruit is going one place and hearing all bad things about the other 13 coaches in the conference. Then he goes to another SEC school, hears bad things about all the other 13 coaches in the conference, and then maybe he goes to a Pac-12 school or a Big 12 school and they don't hear anything about how bad other coaches are, whatever it may be. So I do think it hurts the conference, but at the same time, if you're getting negative recruited, that means that you're doing something right.
Yeah.
So don't ever forget that. Don't let that dismay you as a Razorback fan. If somebody has to take the time to say something bad about you, that means that you've made enough waves. It
means you struck a chord with them.
Oh, yeah.
They feel like they have to say something.
And you definitely did, apparently, with videos, with pictures, with whatever it is you're recruiting. And Musselman has ticked off, I guess, or pettiness, whatever, an assistant coach in the SEC, because with his five videos, he said in his Q&A that we don't want to upset any of the other SEC assistant coaches or anything, but we might actually put out another video saying that he has one more. And that was, I saw the video on this and he was being kind of smart alecky.
He laughed when he said it.
Uh-huh. But yes, there is an assistant coach at a program in the SEC. I will leave it up to you whether or not you want to say his name and where he's at, but he was tweeting out about...
That's okay. I put the... There's a hyperlink in the story.
Okay.
But I'm sure lots of people
know
who it is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, this is the kind of stuff that...
It was weird. Like, it's just...
We need.
It's so 2020 because you see viral videos and the first thing that you think to do is draft a tweet and send a tweet, and then...
Because your way is better than his
and
way.
And then Muss's quote starts going around, and the first thing that the assistant coach does is go back to Twitter, dig up his near month-old tweet, retweet it, and then when he started getting some heat, he undid the retweet. Welcome to 2020.
Yeah, exactly. He can go back and he can undo the retweet or whatever.
Right. Yeah, he was definitely getting some heat.
What's wrong with self-promotion? I mean, isn't that what social media is all about?
Yeah. I mean, what program's not self-promoting? If you're not self-promoting, then you're falling behind.
Yes. So I don't get that. Yes, you don't need to be – he doesn't need to be a social media manager and not a head coach. But trust me, seeing Musselman just a little bit that we see him in a press conference and out on the court, he is not worried about just being a social media manager. He uses that to highlight his game in his coaching ability, not as the complete coaching ability of Eric Musselman. I mean, a guy that's sitting here already watching film of the NBA to try and see how they can utilize Connor Vanover, he's not just sitting there as a social media manager or whatever. So what's wrong with self-promotion? I just don't understand.
Do you think he would be doing it if it was going to have a negative impact on his program?
No.
No, absolutely not.
Anytime you can get retweeted by the four letters... ESPN,
yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. His video of him, was it coaching in the empty practice gym? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one went viral. That was probably the one that went around the most, that caught fire most.
Because who follows the ESPN accounts, the SportsCenter accounts? Everybody that is interested in sports all around the country. So maybe an athlete that's in Washington, all of a sudden, he may not even get recruited, but he knows now that there's a coach at Arkansas. He knows that there's an Arkansas program. And, hey, he might even know that Eric Musselman is the coach now. The kid in New Mexico, all the way up to Connecticut. There's nothing wrong with getting product and putting product out, especially when nobody else is.
It's such an easy way. in a creative way to just, yeah, like you said, just have a far reaching impact on everyone.
What I've really enjoyed during this quarantine time is the coaches that'll go back and live tweet games during replays of games, and they'll kind of tell you what they're thinking. I kind of wish Eric Musselman would do that with some of his games.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
This year, of going back and him talking about, I can't remember which coach it was. I think Bill Self did it for.
Yeah, when they play, I think, it was the national championship
with
game.
With Memphis?
Yeah, with Memphis when Derrick Rose was playing there.
And he went back and live tweeted that game. Okay, so this is the situation that was going on. This is what we did. And they had contained Derrick Rose most of the night, all the way up until.
Yeah, he had a pretty bad night until about midway through the second half.
And for whatever reason, I think he even said this, for whatever reason, we switched and went from whatever zone or defense they were playing and did a box and one. And he said, as soon as we switched from a box and one, Derrick hit his first shot that he attempted after that. And he said, and then after that, we were screwed.
Yeah, because the guy that they ran the box and one, and the one guy that they weren't boxing was Chris Douglas Roberts. It wasn't even Derrick Rose. And so Derrick Rose, you know, felt like he had more space to operate. He got going.
Which was a mistake. But that's interesting. When you can produce content when nobody else is, why would you not? And so, to go out there and just be petty about it, probably because it wasn't your program and it wasn't your idea, more than anything, is probably why you're mad about it, because you're not the one that's getting the promotion. Don't be like that. Just don't.
I don't know if I should say this, but this guy's one that missed out on Mason Jones. That's all I'm going
to
say.
There you go. That's all you need to say, Scotty. That is all you need to say. All right. Let's talk about some real news that happened since we last met. And I guess all of this is real news. But anyway, Vance Jackson coming to the University of Arkansas. I think one of the most surprising or most intriguing quotes that you put in an article that you wrote about him, Scotty, that I kind of gives me an insight into Vance Jackson, is somebody that you talked to said that he is a guard trapped in a forward's body.
Yes.
As a kind of a 6'9 guy and really doesn't want to play it down low. So there will be a link to this article as well. But Scotty caught up with two guys that covered Vance Jackson at New Mexico. And what did you get from those guys, Scotty?
Yeah, so the two guys that I reached out to were Will Weber of the Santa Fe New Mexican and Jeff Grammer of the Albuquerque Journal. I've seen a couple of Jeff Grammer's tweets pop up on my timeline, and one of them was a clip of Mus saying, "I'll read anything Jeff Grammer writes." So I was like, "Okay, Jeff Grammer covered New Mexico. I'm gonna talk to Jeff Grammer, because you know if Mus likes him, he must be pretty insightful." And he was. The main thing that both guys told me was that Vance is just, he's incredibly versatile. And they mentioned that, you know, he's got really good range for a guy that's 6'9", and he's got range that extends far beyond the already extended 3-point line, which is, that's really intriguing to me. He's shot 35% from three on more than 400 attempts in his career. So you've got a good body of work to kind of examine there. And 35% for a 6'9 guy is not exactly half bad.
No.
Definitely take that. And he tends to shoot better in conference play the last couple of years when he was at New Mexico, which is interesting to me. Let me see. Will Weber told me, quote, "He can carry the team when he gets rolling. He's a jump shooter before all else." So my main takeaway just from hearing that was he's going to be kind of maybe a more perimeter-oriented guy at 6'9". You know, at 6'9", 230, that's the perfect build for a guy like, I mean, that's basically Reggie Chaney, pretty much. I think Reggie's 6'8", 222.
Yeah.
Vance is 6'9", 230. So basically Reggie Chaney with a 3-point jumper. And I can get on board with that one. I see you raising your eyebrows. You're getting excited.
I'm all right with that.
But yeah, Vance has a little bit of a past with Mus. In January 2019, he almost went for a triple-double against Mus's Nevada team. He had 18, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. So that right there, he's got some firsthand experience dealing with Vance and knows that, you know, when Vance is on, he can be a killer. Another thing that I really like, and you know, Arkansas is reported, I think it's official now, Arkansas is going to be playing in that MGM Resorts main event in Las Vegas. I think Louisville, San Francisco, and Colorado State are the other three teams in that event. The Mountain West Conference tournament is always played, or it has been the last, as far as I understand, has been played in Las Vegas. And Vance Jackson, every time he played in the Mountain West Conference tournament, went off. And the Mountain West Conference tournament broadcasters, I guess it was probably on CBS Sports Network, I think that's where you find most of their games, they nicknamed him Vegas Vance. And I'm so here for that.
I think he may be taking a little too literally what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. He probably needs to take that somewhere else.
Yeah, for sure. But Arkansas, like I said, goes to Las Vegas. They're scheduled to go to Las Vegas in November. And, you know, if Vegas shows up there, or if Vance shows up there, and
you
I'm there.
Vegas?
Yeah, Vegas Vance. If he shows up there and I'm covering those games, I'm definitely going to write about Vegas Vance. That's no doubt about it. But I went back and looked at all of his games in the Mountain West Conference tournament, and he averaged like 22 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, shot like 40% from 3, almost 50% from the floor. Yeah, I could get on board with that. He sounds like a fun player.
It's going to be completely the opposite almost this team that Musselman is going to put out on the floor for the 2020-2021 season rather than the team that he had out there for the 19-20 season. This team's going to have some length. If you have Connor Vanover, the guys that are coming in the recruiting class, like a Jalen Williams.
The lineup possibilities are so fun
and
to
then
think about.
Vance Jackson. So you think about Reggie Chaney was your center this year. All of a sudden, Vance Jackson, who could play that forward spot, but also can stretch you out to the three-point line, all of a sudden, you could have three guys out there with length and lots of it, and it's just a completely opposite team than what you saw out there for the Razorbacks this past year.
Man, it could be – there are so many lineup combinations that you could go with, and you just think about those possibilities. Like, this could be an incredibly tough team to defend. That's super exciting.
Yeah, and you talk about Vance Jackson likes to shoot the three. Connor Vanover can shoot the three with pretty good consistency, especially for being 7'3".
And you got Moses Moody, Isaiah Joe possibly coming back. JD Notae, I think, has taken a step forward in terms of his three-point shooting. You know, and then I can't forget Desi Sills.
Yeah, you'll have Desi Sills in there. It's going to be interesting. So for you, Scotty, looking at the team that's being assembled by Eric Musselman, they still have the opportunity to at least add another guy kind of in the transfer portal. What do you see maybe are the needs of this team or somebody that Eric Musselman and his staff can go after? And doesn't have to necessarily be a name, but maybe a position, something that they could be missing.
Yeah, he actually talked about that a little bit on his live Q&A. He was like, what do you think that you still need to add to the roster for next season? And the first thing out of his mouth, he said, was experience. So I don't have any doubt that, you know, a grad transfer is a definite possibility. I think there's a guard. His name is Terrell Gomez. He plays at Cal State University Northridge, and he's a kid that, you know, he's 5'8", but I think he shot 44% from three last year, 94% from the line. Really low fouls committed guy, which Musk loves that, obviously. Pretty high assist numbers from what I remember. You know, he would be a grad transfer, so he could obviously give you some experience. Other than that, you know, I think they've missed on – I wouldn't want to say that they've missed, but there have been some grad transfers, like the kid from Yale would have been a really nice addition. And, there's been a couple other guys, you know, like Justin Turner from Bowling Green. I was a really big fan of his game. I thought he could really fill it up. I think he's averaged almost 19 points a game at Bowling Green last season. But I think just some experience and you know, when you are bringing in so many new guys, you got to have some older experienced guys who have kind of, you know, been through it, maybe not on this level, but they have been through it before, that can kind of, you know, just kind of help a team mesh together.
All right. Well, before we wrap it up here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the story that Scotty has been teasing on this podcast for 2-3 weeks, it seems like, and his Adrio Bailey story that was a fantastic read and just give you insight about Adrio. Scotty, what did you learn specifically about the man Adrio Bailey instead of the athlete Adrio Bailey in your piece?
That's a good question. I think he's a family means a lot to Adrio. He's got a brother named Byron Golston, who I actually wasn't able to put into the story. He's got another brother, Major Bailey Jr., and his father is Major Senior. I asked him during that sit-down interview, and I think we're going to have that audio from that interview as like a bonus podcast later in the week. But I noticed just following Adrio on Twitter and Instagram, his dad and his brother got to come up for a couple of games this year. And I just asked him what it was like when those three got into the, when Major Junior, his dad, and Adrio got in the same room together. And he just busted out laughing. Like, he laughed so loud that there were a couple players in the practice gym when I was talking to him and a couple of coaches that, you know, they whipped their head around to see what was going on. But just thinking about him just put such a big smile on his face, and they mean so much to him. And, you know, there was a point when Adrio was growing up, you know, he lost his mom to a lung disease when he was 14 in the 10th grade. And Adrio said that there was a point after that he wasn't sure that he was even going to go to college, because his dad was really going through it. And so they just, you know, they just had to kind of bond together and get through it together. And Adrio's dad was a guy who, you know, after his mom passed, he was just doing any and everything that he could to keep his boys happy. Like, he would come home, you know, he would travel quite a bit, but he would come home with like a new video game, a new football, a new basketball, just to brighten their day up. And I thought that was really cool. And Adrio told me that he gets a lot of his personality from his dad. I mean, you can look on his Instagram from time to time, and maybe there's a couple of photos on Twitter that Adrio's taking pictures with fans, and his dad's just in the background making funny faces and like throwing peace signs up with both hands. Like, it's pretty cool. I think Adrio definitely said that's where he got his personality from. So that was really cool to learn.
What maybe could you not fit into your story that you wanted people to know about Adrio?
Oh, that's a good question. I wrote almost 2,000 words, so I almost got everything in there. Yeah, that's a good question. No, maybe I might change it up on you. Like, the most interesting thing I thought that, you know, just maybe an outside the box story that he told was, you know, the times that he had to ride those Jefferson Lines buses from, you know, he'd hop on down at the corner of Weddington, and he would ride those buses from Northwest Arkansas back home. And he told a story that I think it was after Arkansas lost to North Carolina one time, there was an Arkansas fan that was waiting in line with Adrio to get on the bus. And the fan recognized Adrio and asked him for an autograph. And then they rode on the bus together. And then there was another one. There was another story he told. The bus stopped in Texarkana, and he said a couple of guys who looked like they had just been released from the prison in Texarkana, they got onto the bus. He said they looked like they were mad at the world and didn't have any belongings with them. So that's why I guess he assumed they were inmates. And Adrio's, you know, dressed down in like this Nike issued Arkansas gear. Like, it's fresh, nice, And one of the guys just starts like looking him up and down. And he's like, I'm not scared, but I'm a little bit scared. Like, I'm the biggest person on this bus, but I'm a little bit, you know, he's a little bit nervous. One of the guys just like walked up to Adro, and Adro had his bags in the seat next to him. And one of the guys just grabbed one of the bags and just kind of threw it. And Adro was like, I'm not fixing to lose my life because you're mad. Like, you got that. Like, you can have the seat. Like, all you got to do is ask. But he even asked. So that was really interesting. It's just, I think it's just a story. It's a little bit of insight into, and this is obviously, it's, I think it's kind of unique to Adro, because I don't know of any other kid that was having to do this. But sometimes I've said it before, like sometimes I think we think some of these athletes just have everything just kind of served to them on a silver platter. Like, they've got all these amenities on campus and they're issued all this gear, and we just kind of think that they've got it made. And then, you know, they get to play ball, and if they play well, then fans just kind of get to adore them. But that's just kind of a showcase of maybe, you know, some of the struggles that not everybody takes into account. And, you know, he told me that some of those buses, sometimes they would break down. Sometimes the bathroom on board wouldn't work. Sometimes there was like food and drinks. And he said there was even vomit on some of the seats too. I mean, you're just, think about that. Like, he's having to weather that just so he could get home and see his family whenever he could.
Yeah. It's crazy to think about you don't always think about the athlete and their home life, so to speak. They mm-hmm. have everything made when they're on campus. Sure, quote unquote, everything made. But when they're trying to go home, how that works, do they even have a car? So all of those things can add up to life just not being as easy as we think it is,
right,
from the outside
for sure.
Looking in.
Yeah. And the reason that he was having to ride those buses back home is because, you know, he didn't have a car his first 2 years. And I think Matt Zimmerman, who I talked to for this, he was terrific, telling me about one of the times he went down to Campy and watched one of Adrio's practices. He told me that, you know, he didn't keep count of the number of times that Adrio dunked, but he, you know, he sent a text to TJ Cleveland after he got done watching practice. He was like, he's dunked like 100 times. Like, we've got to have this kid. Like, he's a Mike Anderson kind of kid. We got to have him. And then he went back for a tournament, went down to the Shreveport area and watched Adrio. And he's sitting on the front row watching him do his thing. And he's got, you know, obviously he's got his Arkansas gear on, because he's an assistant at the time. And everybody's just coming up to him at the game being like, Adrio's so awesome. Y'all are getting a really good kid. And meanwhile, Adrio's just dominating on the floor. Like, he's making really physical moves around the rim, throwing down dunks. It's getting everybody excited. You know, Zimmerman went on and on about the atmosphere in the gym that night, and it was because of Adrio.
As we said, you can read that story. Look in the description of this podcast. It'll be there. All the great stories that Scotty has written that we've talked about will be there as well. So make sure to check those out. Some of the ones that you maybe you haven't read yet, you got lost in all of this news that's coming out. News. Mm-hmm. And but we at Whole Hog Sports are still working to get you some great quality content. So make sure you go on over to wholehogsports.com and see that great quality content. And we will be back here next week. Not sure yet what we'll talk about, but we'll be here and we'll get you through this coronavirus one week at a time without basketball. Scotty, this would have been, we would have known who the national champion was.
Yep.
Today.
Absolutely. You're right. We would have gotten one shining moment on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been fun.
It would have been something.
So I've got just a couple of things that I've got working, that I'm working on. You know, I've got we're recording this on Tuesday morning, and, you know, I've got the Jimmy Witt season review, and I've scheduled it for Wednesday. And later this afternoon, I'm supposed to talk to the guy behind the Hog Tunes Twitter account.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, so that's really cool. He does such good work. And Mallory, my wife, she, one of my Christmas presents this year, she got the Hog Tunes guy. His name's Gary Thomas. He lives down in Fort Smith. She got him to make a caricature of my Twitter profile picture, and it's awesome. It's incredible, and just the detail he puts into those caricatures and those cartoons. They're witty, they're fun, they're really cool. So I just kind of wanted to get to know him, because I think some of his work has been started, especially during basketball season, it really started picking up. Like the We Are Arkansas account on Twitter started, you know, just grabbing the photos of the latest cartoon that he did, you know, in like their game preview tweet for the day, like Arkansas plays Tennessee today. Here's a cartoon from Hogtoons. And, you know, I think it really started picking up steam, and I think, you know, it's so unique what he's doing. I think fans really enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to getting some insight and getting to know him a little bit better.
It's reminiscent of the old cartoons that you used to see in the newspaper before Arkansas football games. I believe the Saturday of Arkansas football games, they would always put those cartoons when I was growing up in the newspaper. And I always enjoyed those to see what the Arkansas Democrat Gazette was going to draw up for Arkansas versus Auburn, Arkansas versus Alabama, those kind of things. It was really entertaining. They don't do that anymore, but that's what that reminds me of. And you really do need to go follow him at Hogtoons, and make sure to follow us as well on Twitter at Whole Hog Sports. You can follow Scotty at NWA Scotty and me at Seth Campbell 5. All right. Well, for Scotty Bordelon and the entire WholeHogSports.com crew, I am Seth Campbell saying thank you for joining us, and we will see you back here next week.